I can say with absolute certainty, without fear of contradiction, we shall not look upon his like again.
The Vice President remembers Senator Stevens. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 18th of August. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans waiting in line to attend Stevens' funeral shared their memories.
He would see us in the office and he would pick us up and play with us sometime, and we would run around in the neighborhood and say, vote for Uncle Teddy, vote for Uncle Teddy.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Thousands of mourners and a long list of dignitaries gathered at Anchorage Baptist Temple this afternoon to say goodbye to Senator Ted Stevens. It was a somber occasion, but there were also plenty of laughs as those who knew the senator shared their favorite stories. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski quickly set the theme for the ceremony.
Ted was Alaska. He just was Alaska.
Murkowski talked about the number of young Alaskans Stevens helped raise. She said he would recognize their talent and help encourage their success. And she said he taught everyone in Alaska the value of not giving up.
As important as Ted Stevens is to Alaska's history, he was all about Alaska's future. The legacy of dreams and the hope and the confidence that he left Alaskans surrounds all of us.
After Murkowski spoke, Vice President Joe Biden offered the first of three tributes to Stevens. Biden served with Stevens in the Senate for 37 years, and he started things off with a lighthearted reference to Stevens' ability to bring federal dollars to Alaska.
A significant portion of the money that belongs in Delaware and New York and Georgia, and as I look out at my colleagues, Hawaii resides right here in Alaska. Right here in Alaska.
Biden also talked about his first days in the Senate in 1973 when he was still reeling from the death of his first wife.
And many of my colleagues, some of whom are here today, offered help to get me through a pretty tough time in my life. But very few, I can count on one hand, and I can name them, offered as warm an embrace as the Republican senator who I had never met in my life, who walked across the floor of the Senate to my corner desk, up by that roll-top desk, extended his hand and said, I want to get to know you. Ann and I want you to come to dinner.
Biden said he was able to offer support to Stevens when his first wife, Ann, died 5 years later. He ended his tribute with this message.
And to the people of Alaska, I can say with absolute certainty, without fear of contradiction, what Hamlet said of Horatio. We shall not look upon his like again. I was proud to be his friend.
Senator Mitch McConnell, who is also minority leader, talked about Stevens' legendary grit. He said Stevens' contributions to Alaska were as great as the state itself. McConnell noted that most lawmakers in Washington would invite you to dinner, but Stevens was different.
Ted Stevens invited you to Alaska. He wanted us to appreciate the unique challenges the people who lived here faced every day in and every day out. And I can assure you that turning down an invitation to Alaska from Ted Stevens was not recommended. In fact, an entire generation of federal officials and lawmakers trekked up here at Ted's invitation. Many of them are here today. And not a single one of them ever left without being impressed by two things. The magnificence of the scenery, and just how much of Alaska's progress is the direct result of this remarkable man.
Senator Daniel Inouye, a Democrat from Hawaii, was one of Ted Stevens' closest friends, both in and out of the daily workings of Congress. They called each other brother, and Inouye said when Stevens was sworn in on December 24, 1968, he was a Christmas gift to Alaska. He said when oil was discovered in Prudhoe Bay, Stevens called him and asked him to come to his office.
Well, we got to find a way to get it down here so we can sell it. I says, how do you propose to do that? I'm going to build a pipeline. I said, you're nuts.
Inouye listed years of accomplishments, trips together to Iraq and Afghanistan in times when they slept in tents with no electricity or other services, and worked to help the two distant states meet the needs of their citizens. Inouye said their personal and congressional relationship helped set the tone for getting things done.
We made the word bipartisan become real. Real. And as you look around here, among his colleagues, former colleagues, and you will see a lot of Democrats. The vice president is Democratic. Yes.
He said Stevens loved the military, and after the Vietnam War, when an all-volunteer military became the standard, he said Stevens vowed to help those who would be willing to risk their lives to protect his. Inouye said, veterans have lost a good friend. When the ceremony ended, the honor guard carried the casket out of the church, followed by the family, the dignitaries, including the vice president, and friends. The family stayed behind to talk to those who attended a reception that followed the service. APRN's Libby Casey attended the memorial service today and joins me now. Hi, Libby.
Hi, Lori.
Libby, describe what it looked like inside the church this afternoon.
Well, they had the Alaska flag, the American flag set up, a rich display of flowers, and it almost looked like an Alaskan fall evening because they had this dark blue backdrop set up with almost stars coming out, and this was a backdrop for all of the speakers. And the most special thing was they had some elements of Ted Stevens on the stage. They had this Alaska Native leather beaded vest that he used to wear. I believe it was a gift, and he used to wear that to events like the AFN convention. It also was in his office. They had a couple of incredible Hulk giant green gloves, the seal of the U.S. Senate, and also Ted Stevens' fishing poles.
What were some of the more touching moments you saw today?
Well, they had a slideshow and video display set up that was rolling as people entered the church, and it showed the life of Ted Stevens, the senator, but also of his life as a man. And so you saw him with presidents, like President Eisenhower. You also saw him campaigning in rural Alaska or doing work in the Capitol building. But there were these personal moments of him with his family, at the weddings of his children, at the births of grandchildren. And there were, it was a real sense of him as an individual, a private person, as well as the senator that so many Alaskans know. When Vice President Biden and his wife Jill entered the church, they went right up to the front and took a moment with the families of those who were killed in the plane crash, and also the survivors. A couple of the survivors from last week's crash were there, present, just released from the hospital. And so we don't know what the Bidens were saying to them, but that was very touching to see them taking that time. And then there were other moments, like when the wives of other U.S. senators went on stage during the recitation of the Lord's Prayer and held each other's hands. And you could see that there's this family of the Senate that was present here today. And then as the casket was taken out of the church, the family followed behind, and as it was put into a hearse by the honor guard, Catherine Stevens, Ted Stevens' wife, approached the casket and took a moment, of course, it was draped with the flag, and just had a private moment there with her husband. And, you know, before the hearse drove off and the family came back inside, she had some personal time there to have her moment with him. And that was very touching to watch.
There was a long list of honorary pallbearers in the service program. What was the significance of that list?
Well, that's right. And it's really a who's who of Alaska, but not just Alaska, but also the nation. It had names including General Colin Powell and Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, governors of Alaska, people who have had held cabinet jobs in the United States. And not all of these people were present. For example, Colin Powell was not here, but they were listed in the program as people the family feels are significant, were significant to Ted Stevens' life as well as his career, and they wanted to acknowledge them. A lot of the Alaskan leaders on the list were here, people like Governor Sean Parnell and Representative Don Young. I talked to Julie Kitka, the head of the Alaska Federation of Natives, who's one of the few women who was on the honorary pallbearers list, and she said it was really an honor for her. And she was telling her father, who's in his 80s, about what it meant for her and for their family to be recognized here today as an Alaska Native woman. The people who were here walked behind the casket in the family and were present to show their support and be there for the family today.
All right. Thank you, Libby.
Thanks, Lori.
APRN's Libby Casey at the funeral of Senator Ted Stevens. As soon as the doors of the Anchorage Baptist Temple opened before the service at noon today, a steady stream of people flowed through the two entrances. KSKA's Len Anderson collected a few of their reflections as they were in line.
And I'm Mike Hunt, and I'm wearing a uniform of the Air Transport Command, Army Air Corps, 1942. I flew the hump with Senator Stevens, although I didn't know him then. Flew Lend-Lease airplanes to the Russians in Fairbanks during the war. Came back in 47 and started a non-scheduled airline. And he also appointed my son to West Point. Our paths have crossed several times. A great man.
Ted Stevens was, I believe, neither a Republican or a Democrat. When he saw the people, it didn't matter if it was a village of 65 people or this community, largest community here in Anchorage.
The thing I appreciated, he didn't agree with everything we asked for, but he told us. He told us like it is. We sought some help legislatively, and he said, it's not going to work. I can't get the support. And that's one of the things we respect is honesty.
My name is Ray Ward. I've known Senator Stevens since I was a little boy. I remember when we were kids and we used to help him campaign. He would see us in the office and he would pick us up and play with us sometime and we would run around in the neighborhood and say, vote for Uncle Teddy, vote for Uncle Teddy.
He always had room in his office to greet people from quote unquote back home. And back home was everywhere in the state. And he had this feeling that, hey, we came into this statehood thing rather late, and we've got a lot of catching up to do. And he really talked for basic needs of the people of this state. It was wonderful. So he'll be missed, and he'll be remembered.
Roy Burkhart and I live in Willow, Alaska. We've known Senator Stevens and his family since 1961. So I think what made him great and a lot of the other ones, the old timers, was Alaska was their number one priority. Their personal ambitions were secondary. Alaska was number one. And we're losing too many of them like that. That's too bad.
Those were thoughts from some of the people who attended Senator Stevens' funeral today in Anchorage. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a look at the crowded field for Lieutenant Governor.
I'm running because I think Alaska's economy is in the most dangerous place it's been in the 33 years I've lived in Alaska.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
A tense meeting of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council went into recess this afternoon so members could attend the Ted Stevens funeral, but they will be back at work tomorrow on the issue of stellar sea lions. The council is looking at a biological opinion, or BIOP, from the National Marine Fisheries Service that would shut down all Atka mackerel and Pacific cod fishing west of Kiska Island to reduce the possibility of depriving endangered stellar sea lions of food. The fishing industry has come up with its own set of fishing cutbacks, which they laid out yesterday to the council's advisory panel. The industry plan would still allow some fishing, but would also involve some more severe curtailments than the BIOP calls for. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
They've been cutting back fisheries in the Aleutians to try to help sea lions since the early 1990s, and for whatever reason, they've begun to recover, or at least have slowed down in their decline. Except in the western Aleutians, where there's been a 40% decline in the last 8 years. There have been theories. Maybe they thought fishery policies have led to too many pollock, and they were a kind of junk food. That theory was shot down. Then they thought maybe the young sea lions were not getting enough to eat and not surviving. Maybe. But now the theory is that there are just not enough pups born to replenish the population, and the National Marine Fisheries Service believes that the Endangered Species Act requires a full court press to eliminate anything that might contribute to that. Since Monday, members of the council and its panels have been taking pot shots at the biop, which cuts out all Atka mackerel and Pacific cod fishing west of Kiska Island. The industry plan puts some fishing back in there, but pulls back on fishing effort to the east, all the way to Adak. Much of what's being said will no doubt provide legal ammunition for a future court fight, but meanwhile, the council has already been told by the Obama administration that the protective actions in the biop will be implemented by the first of next year anyway. At the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, I'm Steve Heimel.
There are no shortage of Republican and Democratic hopefuls for lieutenant governor this year. The slate of candidates crowds both major party ballots for the state's number two job. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports.
It's the one state job that can't be terminated by the governor. Whoever holds the lieutenant governor's position has to be ready to step up to the plate at a moment's notice.
You're getting on an airplane and the co-pilot doesn't know how to land the airplane, I'd say get off.
That's Republican candidate Meade Treadwell. Four Republicans and three Democrats are vying for their party's nod, and they represent every facet of the political spectrum. They include a seasoned legislator, a business and government leader, an on-air personality, and a man whose middle name is Joker.
There's a bunch of socialist maggots. That's what I'm going to call them, a bunch of maggots.
That's radio talk show host Eddie Burke speaking on air about some people he disagreed with a couple of years ago. He has a sharp bark, but little experience in government work. Burke is a self-styled populist and a conservative who once ran against Mark Begich for city assembly. Burke calls himself a Tea Party candidate who decided to run when current Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell dropped out of the race.
I got in exactly when he was getting out. And then about a month later, so then along came Meade Treadwell. And so I don't know. But, you know, I never want to be accused of splitting the vote or being the spoiler because I was in before the other guy was.
Meade Treadwell says he's a high technology entrepreneur with a long business and government record. The single father of three is focused on the economy.
I'm running because I think Alaska's economy is in the most dangerous place it's been in the 33 years I've lived in Alaska. And I feel compelled to make sure our government pays attention to fill up the oil pipeline. We've got to stand up and fight with the federal government that's made 8 decisions this year to help choke off new supplies for TAPS.
Treadwell's public policy resume includes an association with Alaska icon Wally Hickel. He helped to start the All-Alaska Gas Pipeline Project in the 80s, served as Deputy Commissioner of DEC, directed the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation, and chaired the U.S. Arctic Research Commission under President Bush. He's running because Hickel asked him to. Treadwell says his experience at the cabinet level in both the Bush and early Obama administrations could serve the state well in debates over Alaska resource issues.
In the oil business, we have to make sure that we're competitive and attracting investment from around the world, and we also have to make sure that we can come to some kind of agreement with the federal government on access, because there's more oil up there.
Jay Ramras is the only interior Alaskan on the ballot. The Fairbanks hotel owner spent 3 terms in the state legislature, chairing House Resources and Judicial Committees. Ramras says he's got the background in government to make the lieutenant governor's position one that has some clout.
Is an opportunity, I think, to galvanize the will and the wishes of many small constituencies across Alaska, help raft together the interests of Alaskans in different regions to reach out to the Pacific Rim trading partners that are going to be essential for Alaska's robust growth.
He says his focus is the state's economy and his business endeavors will serve the lieutenant governor's position. Ramras employs 250 people.
I understand the regulatory burden that is on our small business owners. And because I'm in the service industry, I have a great deal of empathy for folks that are laddering their way up. And those that are trying to stay above a safety net by working to bring that approach to the position that I'm running for.
Despite challenges, Ramra says he's optimistic about the state's future.
The colonial posture that we assumed for so much of our last 50 years, which is to be at the end of the supply chain, that cannot be the blueprint for Alaska's future going forward. I remain hopeful of a large diameter gas pipeline, but only when the global marketplace is ready for it. I am an advocate of providing for in-state natural gas.
The fourth Republican candidate, Bob Joker Lupo, resides in Eagle River. He's a military veteran, a stand-up comic, and a poet. Lupo has never held public office. Democratic candidates Diane Benson and Lynette Marino Hintz are both Alaskan natives hailing from the state's southeast. Benson is noted for her perennial runs at office and in a 2006 election grabbed almost 41% of the vote away from Congressman Don Young. She ran for Alaska Lieutenant Governor in 2002. Benson is a writer, actress, published author, and an outspoken anti-war advocate. She even once drove a tractor-trailer truck on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline as one of the few women truck drivers hired. Lynette Marino Hintz calls herself a Native activist and has taken a role in community service with leadership stints with organizations as varied as the Alaska Native Sisterhood and the Anchorage Cab Drivers Association. Bingo parlor operator Jack Powers is a longtime Alaskan who came up with the military and has remained in Anchorage. He raised two boys as a single father. Libertarian candidate Jeffrey Brown is running unopposed. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. What would you do with an extra $56 a week? Well, that's how much you're spending if you smoke one pack of cigarettes a day. At $8 a pack, that's $240 a month, $3,000 a year. Think about it, and think about quitting. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. It's free, and it works. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line.
The body of a missing Eagle Customs agent has been found. Charles Chuck Collins' body was discovered along the Yukon River near Eagle Sunday night. Eagle resident Dave Helmer says he was out looking for poles for a fish wheel when he spotted a body on a driftwood pile. Helmer says Collins' body was carried a long way by the water back to Eagle.
From the O'Brien Creek, where he had gone off the road, it was several miles down O'Brien Creek to the 40 Mile River. And then it's, I believe, about 50 miles down the 40 Mile River to the Yukon River. And it's about 50 miles on down the Yukon to Eagle here. So it was interesting that he ended up back here in Eagle. But he was a good friend and well-liked in the community.
Collins was last seen before driving out of Eagle on the Taylor Highway July 11th as heavy rain began to fall. His damaged vehicle was later found empty in O'Brien Creek, where it ended up after sliding off the road down a 200-foot embankment. Next Tuesday's primary election contains two ballot measures. Backers of Ballot Measure 1 tout it as a much-needed anti-corruption tool directed against state government. Opponents warn its impact would gag thousands of Alaskans from political participation. In the first of a two-part series on the ballot measures, KSKA's Len Anderson focuses on number 1.
As the title now reads, Ballot Measure 1 is an, quote, initiative prohibiting the use of public funds to lobby or campaign, and prohibiting holders of government contracts and family members from making political contributions. In May, Jason Klein of Clean Team Alaska described one goal of the measure to a gathering of the Resource Development Council.
We're hoping to stop publicly funded lobbyists. The idea that you can use taxpayer dollars to fund someone to go down and get more taxpayer dollars, this is an unhealthy, cyclical growth of government that the state cannot afford.
If a company, government entity, school district, union, or other groups benefit from a state contract or grant over $500, individuals could not use their business or organization's money to help testify before any state government group. Nor could they do so while on the clock. They would have to take unpaid leave. Another Measure 1 backer, attorney Ken Jacobus, also spoke at the same panel discussion. He pointed to the measure's 2-year prohibition against hiring former legislators and staff aides.
To ensure that a public contract is not awarded and then the legislature or staff member immediately compensated with a job in return for directing the public contract to a certain company.
Jacobus said an exception to that rule is if the legislator or staff member was previously trained and employed in that field. The measure would also ban political contributions from anyone with government grants or contracts and their family members. Opponents like Peggy Wilcox say the sweeping family member aspect of Measure 1 would cripple political participation. At a July Anchorage Chamber of Commerce luncheon, she used an imaginary contribution as an example.
This is my immediate family. When you map it out, it ends up being 54 individuals. I've got one husband, two uncles, two parents, three in-laws, four grandparents, six nieces, 14 nephews, eight aunts, seven siblings, and seven sibling spouses. All of those people would be prohibited from giving a contribution to this particular candidate.
Wilcox then depicted a village business that, as a sole source, sold gas to the troopers and other state agencies. If the amount was over $500 a year, ballot Measure 1 candidate contribution restrictions would apply. Wilcox said the ban would prohibit campaign contributions from her 50-some member family, her workers and their families, and even the vendors and their families who sold the business gas, snacks, ice, and so forth. While the Vote No on One group has launched a heavy media campaign, the Vote Yes backers have pretty much been absent in the media. In May, Clean Team Alaska Chairman Dick Randolph said the group was suspending active campaigning for the measure. Randolph said it was because the new ballot title and description language changes by the Lieutenant Governor and Attorney General gave, quote, unions and the Municipal League an unfair advantage. Since then, the Alaska Public Offices Commission has filed a nearly $340,000 penalty against one of the initiative and ballot measure's primary contribution pass-through organizations. The group, Alaskans for Open Government, will appeal the levy. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. You'll also find pictures, audio slideshows, and video of the remembrances for Senator Ted Stevens. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Len Anderson and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey and Steve Heimel reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.